Chapter 32. Wally Hendry lay on his stomach on the flat top of the turret. His body was stiff and chilled from the cold of the night, and the rock was harsh under him, but the discomfort hardly penetrated the fringe of his mind. He had built a low parapet with loose flakes of granite, and he had screened the front of it with the thick, bushy stems of broom bush. His rifle was propped on the parapet in front of him, and at his elbow were the spare ammunition clips. He had lain in this ambush for a long time now, since early the preceding afternoon. Now it was dawn, and the darkness was drawing back. In a few minutes he would be able to see the whole of the clearing below him. "I could have been across the river already," he thought. "Could have been 50 miles away." He did not attempt to analyze the impulse that had made him lie there unmoving for almost 20 hours. "Man, I knew old Curry would have to come. I knew he would only bring one nigger tracker with him. These educated Johnnies got their own rules, man-to-man stuff." And he chuckled as he remembered the two minute figures that he had seen come out of the forest in the fading light of the previous evening. "The bastard spent the night down there in the clearing. Saw him light a match and have himself a smoke in the night. Well, I hope he enjoyed it. His last." Wally peered anxiously out into the gradually gathering dawn. "They'll be moving now, coming up the clearing. Must get them before they reach the trees again." Below him, the clearing showed as a paleness, a leprous blotch on the dark forest. "The bastard!" Without preliminaries, Hendry's hatred returned to him. "This time he don't get to make no fancy speeches. This time he don't get no chance to be hoity-toity." The light was stronger now. He could see the clumps of ivory palms against the pale brown grass of the clearing. "Ha!" Hendry exclaimed. There they were, like two little ants, dark specks moving up the middle of the clearing. The tip of Hendry's tongue slipped out between his lips, and he flattened down behind his rifle. "Man, I've waited for this. 6 months now I've thought about this. And when it's finished, I'll go down and take his ears." He slipped the safety catch. It made a satisfying mechanical click. "Nigger's leading. That's Curry behind him. I have to wait till they turn. Don't want the nigger to get it first. Curry first, then the nigger." He picked them up in his sights, breathing quicker now, the thrill of it so intense that he had to swallow, and it caught in his throat like dry bread. A raindrop hit the back of his neck. It startled him. He looked up quickly at the sky and saw it coming. "God damn it," he groaned, and looked back at the clearing. Curry and the nigger were standing together, a single dark blob in the half-light. There was no chance of separating them. The rain fell faster, and suddenly Hendry was overwhelmed by the old familiar feeling of inferiority, of knowing that everything, even the elements, conspired against him, the knowledge that he could never win, not even this once. They, God and the rest of the world, the ones who had given him a drunk for a father, a squalid cottage for a home, and a mother with cancer of the throat. The ones who had sent him to reform school, had fired him from 24 jobs, had pushed him, laughed at him, jailed him twice. They, all of them, and Bruce Curry, who was their figurehead, they were going to win again. Not even this once. Not even ever. "God damn it," he cursed in hopeless, wordless anger against them all. "God damn it. God damn it to hell!" And he fired at the dark blob in his sights.